This should be played at high volume. Welcome to Out of Pocket. Here's your host, Michael Davis.
Welcome to Out of Pocket with Michael Davis on Tobacco Road Sports Radio, tobaccoroadsportsradio.com, and WWBG 1470 AM as part of your TGI Friday lineup. We have a great show in store for you today. You just got done listening to Frankly Speaking Sports Carolina with Larry Frank as part of the TGI Friday lineup. We're continuing the TGI Friday lineup with Out of Pocket with Michael Davis, and we're going to have later in the show a big panel, the biggest in Out of Pocket history, talking about wrestling, talking about Vince McMahon, talking about WWE being sold. But for now, we got some NFL playoffs to talk. So we're welcoming back Out of Pocket reg Jackson Cordray. Jackson, how are you doing today?
Michael, I'm great, man. Spencer Rattler's back with my team. He's coming back. He didn't leave for the draft. I'm repping Gamecocks all day, baby, and I'm ready to talk some football.
Now, I'm glad you mentioned you were repping your South Carolina Gamecocks with pride, because you also can watch Out of Pocket with Michael Davis on the YouTube channel. All our, probably from the last month or so, we've had shows uploaded on YouTube. Thank you to producer Desmond Johnson for that. But Jackson, I wanted to start out with, it's kind of sad that this was our last top quarter rankings, and I'm usually... I don't put a lot of stock into what people say, but when my own dad picks your top quarter rankings over mine, it kind of hurts a little bit.
I mean, Michael, this isn't the first time he's picked me, right? I mean, we have consistently posted on Facebook and Instagram all year long our top quarter rankings, and I'm going to be frank with you, Michael. I think about every time we've gotten an interaction on Instagram or Facebook, someone has commented, Jackson's just probably right.
And just someone.
And it doesn't help that 15 of them have been from your father. So shout out to Mr. Mack out there. I appreciate the support. And he's correct, of course. Jackson's is better. So that at the end of the day, I appreciate it. Everyone that's interacted over the season. Overall, I think we can all agree. I think I've just had the better rankings, Michael.
Hey, it is something when my own dad can't support me, but it's probably because for the last half of the year, I've had the San Francisco 49ers at the number one spot, as they should be, because looking at this team going in the playoffs, I feel like they are the most dangerous playoff team. They literally have every position figured out except for quarterback, and the quarterback, Mr. Irrelevance, actually performing well. Jackson, they actually have your Seattle Seahawks this weekend in the first NFL playoff matchup, and they're favored by double-digit points right now. I mean, let's be honest, and be honest with me. Don't be out of pocket. Does Seattle stand a chance against the Super Bowl favorite San Francisco 49ers?
Super Bowl favorite is a bit of an extreme. Let's pretend that Kansas City, Buffalo, or Cincinnati aren't out there, and even Philadelphia. But otherwise, I'm going to go with they do, maybe, kind of. It's going to be awful weather. I've heard it's going to pour down rain. That makes the town a little bit more even if you have bad weather, especially with a rookie quarterback that can always lead to turnovers and opportunities to give Seattle's defense a chance to get back into the game. My biggest question is that – most times, if a team meets three times in a season, the third time, and they've lost the previous two, the third time, statistically, it's shown that 13-6 is the record of the team that lost twice before. So Seattle statistically has a chance in this game. Now, with it being the Niners, man, they're loaded at every position. Debo's back, CMC, Kittle. I mean, that offense, Brandon and I mean, the offense is insane. But at the quarterback position, they're weaker, and that's the biggest position on the team. And, man, I'm curious to see what Seattle has planned. I'm curious to see what Shane Waldron has done with the offense going forward. The first couple of games, they really didn't do anything. The first two games against the Niners, they avoided under center to avoid Nick Bosa and that dominant rush. I'm curious to see what they do. It's unlikely that they win, but man, if they're unhinged and they're loose all game and you get Geno cooking, I don't know, anything's possible. I wouldn't expect an upset, but man, with that weather and Geno figuring things out, who knows?
Now, this is why they're the Super Bowl favorite, okay? They are two things we need to be in the playoffs. You need to be healthy, which you just mentioned, Deebo Samuel just getting healthy. Chris McCaffrey, probably the most healthy he's been in 3 years. And they're also one of the hottest teams in the NFL going through their win streak. I'm saying, Jackson, there's a chance, especially like Seattle. I feel like your left tackle, Cross, has kind of regressed this year as like the years went on. And going against Nick Bosa too, like that just seems like a disaster for me waiting to happen.
Yeah, man, I'm not entirely sure he's regressed. I think rookie tackles in general throughout the season are kind of up and down anyways. We've seen over the years, rookie guards, tackles, offensive linemen kind of float between good some weeks, bad some weeks. I mean, you can look at the stats. He dominated Khalil Mack and then lost the next week to a rookie that was out of I can't even remember where, but he got dominated the week after he faced Khalil Mack. So, you know, it's up or down. Who knows who shows up? What I'm expecting is I'm expecting Seattle to hit the run game and try to dominate there. Limit Nick Bosa's pass rushing as much as possible. He's the best pass rusher in the league. Sorry, Michael Parsons. He's just that much better. And going forward, they need to run the ball. Let K-9, Kenneth Walker, get things going. And maybe then you really have a chance. Hit some play action. But, man, I what I see out of this game is, you know, I see that 10-point spread or 9.5-point spread, and I'm just not comfortable with betting anything but Niners to cover there. Yeah. It's going to be hard. The only way they win is if they play unhinged and loose all game and get the run game going. In that weather, anything's possible, especially with Purdy throwing picks. But, man, Kyle Shanahan's going to have a couple of tricks up his sleeve. And it's a scary time. But let's be honest, I was one of the very, very few people that had the Seahawks in the playoffs and Geno playing well. And I'm just happy we made it all the way there. That's at the end of the day. Just happy to make it there.
At the end of the day, we're just glad to be here, you know. But that does say something because it was one of our first out-of-pocket episodes. You're like, man, this is a Super Bowl for us playing the Denver Broncos and Russell Wilson. Like, this is what we need to do. This is what we need to do to win. And I don't care if we lose the rest of our games. And turns out you're in the playoffs against the San Francisco 49ers. And Geno has a lot to prove. I feel like he has a chip on his shoulder to prove that he is a legit quarterback because he's actually played well in the system. But Seattle, San Francisco, I'm expecting the 49ers to win, and I'm honestly expecting them to cover, but it could be like a 13-14 point game, and that's not the only game on Saturday. It's the Chargers at the Jaguars. Now, going back to one of our earlier episodes of Out of Pocket before the season, I was very high on Justin Herbert. You were very high on Justin Herbert and the Los Angeles Chargers. And they got hot at the right time, and they've gotten healthy, and now they've snuck in the playoffs against another hot team with the Jaguars, two very young quarterbacks, Justin Herbert, Trevor Lawrence. Who would you trust more in this environment in the playoffs, Herbert or Lawrence?
It's Herbert. I mean, it's not even like a question for me. Not even a question. I think Justin Herbert's probably the third best quarterback in the NFL right now. You give him the pieces he needs around his team. Quality pieces.
Who do you think's worse than Herbert?
Josh Allen, Dak Prescott, Joe Burrow, guys like that. You know, this guy is built like Mahomes. His arms built like Mahomes and his body is built like Allen's. He's a freak of nature, Rodgers. But you give him time and you give him the pieces that any of those teams have. You give him Stephon Diggs. Just saying. You give him Stephon Diggs, things are different. You give him Tyreek Hill or Travis Kelce, things are a little different. But in this game, I'm expecting it to be physical at the line of scrimmage. I'm expecting Trevor Lawrence to have a stellar game. He's one of the best quarterbacks in the league right now. He's been one of the hottest quarterbacks in the league. Last week we saw in the Jags-Titans game how physical it was and how the defense for the Jags won the game for them. I'm expecting this game to come up and the Jags to underperform offensively and the Chargers to take advantage of that and win this game.
You act as if Trevor Lawrence has never played in a big game before. This is the former quarterback at Clemson, and I know I'm not comparing big games at college football. I know you're a South Carolina fan. That's probably where this bias is coming from, Jackson, on the radio. It's Friday, 4 o'clock, and you're going to be biased like that against the Clemson quarterback. You're just upset. You're just upset, Trevor Lawrence, all the times he beat South Carolina. But he's played in big game atmospheres before, college football national titles. Justin Herbert, this is probably the first big game he's had. And you act like Austin Eckler is trash compared to, you know, Stephon Diggs, Travis Kelce. but, dude, I'll be honest, either of these teams, I'm kind of afraid who wins this game, because whoever wins this game, A, has momentum that they won a playoff game and probably have the confidence to do it again. And B, they're so like hot right now. The fans are energized. The team is energized. I could see either of these teams in the AFC title game and could honestly see perhaps the Chargers in the Super Bowl like we predicted at the beginning of the year.
I don't even know how to react to that, Michael. If anybody's watching on YouTube, you just saw my face go through 1,000 expressions a second. Chargers in the Super Bowl? Are we talking about the same Chargers team that's missing their star left tackle and have
Keenan Slater Allen, could come back next week if they win this weekend?
Yeah, but we're taking Slater on a first game, no warm-up, against most likely, if they win, the Chiefs. I think we can all agree probably the Chiefs, with Bills and Bengals winning. So we're looking at a team that, I don't know about that, Michael. They got to play Patrick Mahomes, guys. Patrick Mahomes next week if they win. Are we seriously thinking they can make it all the way? That is, I'm not going to say that's, I mean, that's out of pocket or anything close to that. But what I'm saying is that the Chiefs are the Super Bowl favorites, unlike the Niners that you think. And I'm taking Patrick Mahomes any day of the week to do magic consistently. Like, I love Justin Herbert. I love Josh Allen. I love these guys, these extremely talented guys, Dak Prescott, Joe Burrow. I love these guys in the league that are so super talented. But, like, it's hard to express how big of a talent jump there is between Mahomes, one, large jump, Allen, Herbert, jump again, Dak, Burrow. Like, that's how big of a jump it is, and it is not even close. And then maybe somewhere in, you know, fringe territory, you could put Trevor Lawrence. But, dude, to say that they can make it to the Super Bowl with the Chiefs and you having to play at least the Bills or Bengals too, man, Michael, I think that's a hard one to pull out.
Okay, to be fair, like, Justin Herbert and the Chargers were favorites going into the year, and it only takes them getting hot. I don't want to compare it to a Giants 07 and 2011 Super Bowl run, but it kind of has the same vibe of getting hot at the right time, having the running game, having a good quarterback that you can trust. I don't know if Justin Herbert's like, I don't know if Justin Herbert's on Patrick Mahomes level, but especially division rival, like, if there's any team who can go into Arrowhead and win, it's the Chargers because they are familiar with that atmosphere. So, hey, I'm just saying, I could see either of these teams, more likely the Chargers, if they get past the Jaguars and get Rashawn Slater back, going in, upsetting the Chiefs, because the Chiefs, yeah, you know, they've impressed, especially after losing Tyreek Hill, especially losing a couple other players. But they've struggled in games where they shouldn't have, like, beaten Denver by less than possession, beaten Houston by 6 points. Like, I don't know of any like impressive win for the Kansas City Chiefs other than the 49ers earlier in the year. Like, that's their only quality win. I'm saying Chiefs might get a first round exit right after the wild card. But before we get into break, we want to talk about starting in Sunday's action, the Miami Dolphins, Buffalo Bills. Jackson, I don't think there's much to talk about because I feel like Miami has lost a lot of momentum.
Absolutely, they have. They don't have Tua, who is a system quarterback, but at the same time, you lose rhythm. You lose momentum. You know, you go 8-3, and next thing you know, you're 9-8. You know, it's like we all had them in our top of the quarter rankings. I think, Michael, I don't know what the highest you had them was, but I think the highest I had them was potentially even 3. You know, you have teams like this who are really talented, and they just fall off the wagon every year. And I think Dallas has just fallen into that spot, right? So it's tough to say what they're going to do in the playoffs, especially barely sneaking in. I can't fathom a world where they really pull this one out. I just don't see it. I think it's too difficult for them to do.
And as you mentioned earlier, like Miami, I was very high on Miami. It seemed different. I like the coach. Tua's healthy. But once Tua started getting hurt, that ruined the Dolphins' chance, man. And it's really frustrating. They've struggled to get the ball to Jaylen Waddle. So it's really only a one-dimensional offense when you're trying to get the ball to Tyreek Hill. Kind of ignoring Jaylen Waddle also didn't help my fantasy team. Thanks a lot, Mike McDaniel. I'm blaming it for you. But I also think the momentum from DeMar Hamlin and, you know, him recovering well, which is awesome news. I feel like the Buffalo Bills have an incentive to go far in these playoffs. So maybe they do it. I don't know. 13 points seems a little high to me, but is in Buffalo. So do they cover? What happens here?
It's in Buffalo, 13. Mike, you're putting me on the spot here, man. I have no clue. If I had to have an opinion, this is it. I think the Bills cover, and I don't even think it's really too crazy to say that. I think we saw previously just last year them beat the dog out of the Pats. I expect a similar treatment to Miami, as sad as it is. I think that's just how the game's going to go.
Yeah, very well could. I'm actually taking Buffalo by more than 13, thinking they cover. It's hard. Playoff game, double-digit favorite. It's difficult. But we're going to talk about the rest of the NFL playoffs when we come back after the break on Tobacco Road Sports Radio, tobaccoroadsportsradio.com, and WWBG 1470 AM. It's part of your TGI Friday lineup on Out of Pocket with Michael Davis. Welcome back to Out Pocket with Michael Davis on Tobacco Road Sports Radio, tobaccoroadsportsradio.com, and WWBG 1470 AM as part of your TGI Friday lineup. And we talked a little bit of the playoffs. We're going to talk about the rest because we still got 3 games to go. Jackson Cordray joined me back after the break. Jackson, we got the Giants and we got the Vikings. And if you had to tell me in August what quarterback you would trust just to start a game, Daniel Jones or Kirk Cousins, I'm like, can we get option C? But now both quarterbacks are in the playoffs. It's probably honestly not because of their doing. I feel like the Giants, it's because they're coaching. Brian Daboll helping them out. Saquon Barkley has helped a lot being more healthy this year. And then the Vikings. Oh, my gosh. Justin Jefferson. Like, if we gave the MVP to a wide receiver, it could potentially go to Justin Jefferson of how well he's performed this year. But I mean, playoffs, it's quarterbacks. So this is a funny question. It's kind of asking, do you trust Geno Smith in the playoffs? But do you trust Daniel Jones of the New York Giants or Captain Kirk Cousins of the Minnesota Vikings in a playoff game in January this weekend?
I'd love to answer that question, Michael. What I will do is return this back on you. Who is closer to Geno Smith? Is it Kirk? Are you talking about Kirk Cousins or Daniel Jones? I feel like neither one of them are anywhere close to Geno. Neither one of them play like Geno. Moving forward, I will say this. you got to go Kirk Cousins for a matter of fact that he is at least kind of been there, done that, and he's got the most dominant weapon in football, arguably, right? Justin Jefferson is unstoppable unless guarded by Jair Alexander. Moving forward, I think you just give the ball to Jay Jettis, and you trust that he's going to get the job done. Okay, that's how easy Cousins' job is. I had a hard time picking who I favorite in this game. I had a really hard time doing that because I think, man, I think that Giants defense is something. But I like neither one of these offenses particularly, especially with Cousins and with Daniel Jones. But man, if I had to pick, I go Cousins, and I guess I go kind of Vikings here. I really do. I think I have to go with the Vikings. Michael, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, I've thought the same way, and here's how I got here. I trust the Giants running game more. I feel like Dalvin Cook kind of didn't have a great year. Like, if you got him on your fantasy team, it was a struggle for Dalvin Cook. But Saquon Barkley, I just don't – there's something about Minnesota in the playoffs where you, A, don't know what you're going to get. But, B, you've also seen them win just a miraculous – game at the very end, and I'm just envisioning, you know, going to sleep last night thinking about the playoffs, and you know, could easily dream up a Kirk Cousins 57 yard touchdown catch by Justin Jefferson as he struts into the end zone to beat the Giants in overtime or at the end of the regulation, something like that. So It's just really hard. I don't know. It's the first time for the coaches in the playoffs. It's the first time for Daniel Jones, I believe, in the playoffs. Kirk Cousins it's weird. But give me the weapon. Give me Justin Jefferson, because you and I have talked the entire year. Wide receivers matter. And there's a team in the playoffs that doesn't really have a wide receiver and honestly might not even have a quarterback this weekend. Lamar Jackson, the Baltimore Ravens, doubtful to play in the wild card matchup against division rival in Cincinnati against the Bengals. Bengals actually favored, get this, 9.5 points as of right now. Bengals are favored 9.5 points in the playoffs against their division rival. And Lamar's doubtful. I know he has a contract coming up, but you got to play this game, right?
Yeah, you got to play. And I think that line jumps from, 9.5 to maybe 6.5 with a Lamar return. It's crazy to think that 9.5 is actually the number, considering the fact that I actually expect Lamar to play. But thinking about this Ravens roster and this team against the Bengals, who are hot right now, let's just be honest, they are hot as can be. Man, you need a number one wide receiver. And I wouldn't be surprised in Lamar Jackson leaving Baltimore this offseason because of that issue. I expect some sort of trade, some sort of negotiation to go down to where Lamar is a free agent, or he signs a contract extension with another team via trade. You know, I expect him to not be in Baltimore due to the fact that they've never hit on a number one wide receiver. And at the end of the day, if you're throwing a Sammy Watkins, like, that's a problem. If he's on the field, if Sammy Watkins is on the field for you, that is an issue going forward. Like, that's just bad. That just doesn't work. So, man, I'm not surprised that this line's 9.5, really. When you think about it, like, it's a shocking number because you think Lamar's playing, right? And then it's not 100% sure. He's doubtful. You're like, oh, it makes sense. If he is playing, it probably drops to 7, 6.5. But at the same time, you got to think, like, how do you stop that Bengals offense? T. Higgins, Ja'Marr Chase, Joe Burrow, Joe Mixon, Tyler Boyd. I mean, that team is loaded. I'm not even thinking, like, I can't even fathom a way to stop that offense right now. And to be fair, one of the Bills or Chiefs are going to have to do it later on in the season, or they're just going to have to score equally as much as them. Like, I can't fathom stopping that offense right now. So I really do think that the Bengals probably cover here if Lamar doesn't play. But if the line drops and Lamar does play, things can get real interesting. I'll say that.
It's crazy when we think just a year ago when we were here, Cincinnati, we were like, oh, they're a first round exit. They don't have anybody. They have a young quarterback. You know, they have a good rookie receiver, but it's like, it really stops there. And now a year later, they didn't add anybody. They just showed how good they were going to the Super Bowl last year, ultimately losing to the Rams. But the Rams aren't even in the playoffs this year. The Bengals are, and the Bengals are hot, a hot team. That's why they're second in my top core rankings behind San Francisco, who is also hot. Just wanted to point that out, Jackson. I know you just don't want to agree with me. And, you know, it makes for better social media, whatever, but we're not Skip Bayless and, you know, Shannon Sharp. But this is crazy because I feel like Cincinnati could be poised for another run, because if Lamar doesn't play, this should be an easy win. Like, this should be a very easy win. I just can't see a situation where Lamar doesn't play and the Ravens even hang in there with the Bengals, even division rivals. Like, this could be an embarrassing 24-point game. 24-point victory for Cincinnati. Yeah. Like, nobody's stopping the offense. But somebody who did stop the offense last week was, unfortunately, the Washington Commanders when they faced the Dallas Cowboys in Week 18. Dallas was trying to figure out if they were going to get a number one seed or at least a division crown to at least get a home field game, and just didn't have – nothing went Dallas's way last week. Like, that's one of those games you just – you play it, and then as soon as you get to the locker room, you get a tape in your hands, and you do a dumpster fire. Like, that's all you got to do with those games, because Dallas – and I'll say this before we get into the preview for the Monday night game. Dallas relied on their defense at the beginning of the year when Cooper Rush was managing everything, keeping us afloat, but Dak was gone. Then Dak comes back. The offense thrives, but the secondary gets hurt, and now the defense is lacking. But the only saving grace from that game last week was Dallas defense showed up, and we're actually keeping Dallas in that game for the most part up until about midway through the fourth quarter. And I feel like if that was just the only positive you could take is Dallas's defense getting back on track right before the playoffs. I don't expect Dak to have a bad game two times in a row. But Jackson, with all that said, it is Tom Brady. Dallas has never defeated Tom Brady in a game with the Patriots or the Buccaneers. The first week of the season, that's when Dak got hurt and the Cowboys lost 19-3 to the Bucs and looked absolutely horrendous. Like, I don't know, Jackson. My heart says that Dallas can beat Tom Brady, but it's Tom Brady in the playoffs, and you've never beaten him before in the regular season. Now you got postseason Brady. All right. Can I be hopeful as a Cowboys fan?
You can be hopeful. I see this. Call me crazy. You know, I have a bunch of quarterback opinions. I got a bunch of random opinions that end up being true in the NFL. I think this Bucs team is very similar to the Pats team that lost to the Titans in the wild card round before Brady left the team. I think that's what we're kind of looking at. That team wasn't spectacular. This team isn't spectacular. I really do think Dallas has the better quarterback at helm too. I'm going to find it very difficult to see Tampa really pulling this game out. The only way they do that is if, let's be fair, Dak just keeps turning the ball over. I don't even find those turnovers to be largely on him. I find it to be a lot of drops or fluky plays. I just don't see really how Tampa wins here, like, that much. Like, because it's Tom. Let's be fair. It's Tom Brady. It's the greatest quarterback of all time. But at the same time, you also have to consider the fact that, man, they really haven't been performing well this year. And they're not one of those teams like the Chargers or Jags that are hot at the right time. Yeah. They finished 8-9, the first losing record of Brady's career. I love Dallas. I think Dallas is one of the best teams in the NFL. And I've said that for a while now because I think quarterback's one of the best in the NFL. But it's Tom Brady, man. It's hard to pick against them, but I'm going to do it now. I think Dallas really finishes the one out. I think they probably win by one score. I think we can agree to a touchdown, maybe 3 points, four. But man, I don't really consider, you know, Tampa Bay a threat.
And that would scare me, though, if it comes down to a one possession game, Tom Brady in the playoffs, like, and I keep going back to that game a couple weeks ago against the Carolina Panthers, and Tampa Bay was able to win the division through that game. But how they did it was they targeted a corner because the Panthers were hurt in the secondary, J.C. Horn out with injury, ran the exact same play to Mike Evans three times for the three touchdown passes and won the game. Like, I really hope I'm wrong, but I feel like that could happen and that could affect it, because with Dallas, I'm not so concerned about Dak's interceptions. You know, there was a couple plays last week that were really bad. He shouldn't have made those throws, but those are very rare for him. Like you said, I don't think we should penalize quarterbacks for interceptions. Like, sometimes on the stat sheet, the wide receiver needs the interception for a drop ball or a missed route. Like, let's be fair. Am I out of pocket for that?
You're not out of pocket. Not out of pocket for that. But what I will say is that I'd say closer to 77% of the time it's on the quarterback. But I feel like a lot of Dak's picks are actually kind of on the receiving core. The latest pick last week wasn't the out, the quick out.
Oh, that was on Dak.
That was 100% on Dak. He threw it inside. He didn't anticipate it. He threw it so late. That was on Dak. The now, other ones, those are kind of iffy.
Now, what was worse about that interception was he threw that ball one play, and it was almost intercepted for a pick six. The very next play, he runs the same route and throws a pick six. Like, I'm just...
will say this, to give justice to Dak a little bit, throwing those hash, like far outside the hash, out routes, like speed outs, Geno struggles with it. Quarterbacks struggle with those passes because they're far. And not only that, they have to be anticipated. You got to throw it on the money every time. And if you're just a second late, or if it's a second inside, that corner can jump it every time. It's also kind of on the receiver too. You got to round the route a little bit. Like, Calvin Ridley does it best, and that's why I think the Jags can be spectacular next year with Trevor Lawrence taking a step up and Calvin Ridley being like a true one. But, man, that pass was just so bad. Just so bad.
It was bad. I really hope Dallas pulls it out. I don't like playing on Monday night either against Brady, but we'll see how it goes. Interesting to see. I mean, obviously, Cowboys coach will always be under scrutiny and on the hot seat as long as he's not winning a Super Bowl. But it'll be interesting to see if any of these teams can their coach after this week and try to go after a Sean Payton or even a Jim Harbaugh.
Yeah, I think a couple of teams could. I mean, we've recently saw the Sean Payton rumors to the Cardinals and Denver. I think either one of those teams will have to pay heavily through the draft back to the Saints, because man, that guy, he's a special talent, but at the same time, he's a coach, right? Like, he's a coach. You can't trade a first round pick for a coach in this day and age. And that's what the Saints want. And I expect that's what the Saints will get through Arizona or Denver, you know, and a team that I wouldn't be surprised could rumor, you know, a team that I think we'll all be surprised in 2 weeks that could have a fire is the Chargers and Brandon Staley. I wouldn't be surprised if they get rid of him and bring in an offensive talent at head coach to maximize Justin Herbert going forward. I think Staley's done an all right job, but he's kind of been underperforming. You know, to go 10-7 and to miss the playoffs last year and with such a spectacular talent at quarterback, I think you're kind of missing out. And especially for his defense not to perform as well as we all kind of wanted it to. I really do think that he could kind of be on the way out as a playoff coach and get an opportunity with a team that's rebuilding, such as, you know, the Rams, you know, with Sean McVay retiring most likely soon.
Which is so weird to say that Sean McVay could retire, and he's one of the youngest coaches in the league right now. And
youngest coach to ever win a Super Bowl.
Youngest to ever win a Super Bowl retires the next year. What the heck? But Brandon Staley is the name that came to mind as well. And if they lose to the Jaguars this week, I mean, Jim Harbaugh is right there. I actually lean towards Sean Payton in that regard, just because you already have the roster intact. Jim Harbaugh is a guy you're completely wanting to rebuild. And that's a Denver situation. but we'll see what happens. Jackson, we got to get you out of here. We have the biggest panel in out-of-pocket history with Michael Davis. We got Ryan Frick of Tap Outs and Touchdowns. We got Jason Seteg, and we got first-time guest Matt Cosgrove on the show right after the break. We're talking everything WWE, a potential sale, Stephanie McMahon out, Vince McMahon back in, right after the break on Tobacco Road Sports Radio, tobaccoroadsportsradio.com, and WWBG 1470 AM. Stay tuned. Welcome back to Al Paco and Michael Davis on Tobacco Road Sports Radio, tobaccoroadsportsradio.com, and WWBG 1470 AM as part of your TGI Friday lineup. Thank you so much for Jackson joining us the last 30, 40 minutes or so and talking a lot of this NFL playoffs this weekend. There will be some fun matchups. Go Cowboys, please. I want to do the show next week with my Cowboys doing well. But right now we have the largest panel in out-of-pocket history, and it's the first real panel for wrestling because of the big news that came out. And joining me is, obviously, you've met him before, Jason Seteg. Jason, how are you doing today?
I'm good. Ready to, pile drive some geeks and get my stuff in.
Pile drive some geeks. And Matt Cosgrove, first time guest. We're not going to pile drive you, but Matt, how are you doing today?
Doing good. Just ready to blade if I need to.
Yep. Hey, you got the scissor shirt already. People on YouTube watching right now can see your acclaimed shirt. And kudos to Mr. Ryan Frick of Tap Outs and Touchdowns for the DX shirt. Ryan, what's up, my guy?
What's up, guys? I'm ready to get into this conversation. And if y'all aren't ready, then I got two words for you.
Yes, sir. Those were the two words, right? Yes, sir.
Yeah, that's it.
That's what a lot of people are going to be saying now to their returned chairman of the board. Vince McMahon really forced his way back into WWE, and news was breaking right after the podcast on, I recorded it Tuesday, aired YouTube Tuesday, and then Wednesday when it airs on Tobacco Road Sports Radio as part of the Wrestling Wednesday lineup, news was breaking and Vince McMahon was back in charge. Stephanie McMahon is gone, and there's a potential Saudi Arabia sale by any chance, but there's a lot to get to. Jason, Vince McMahon is back. Like, what happens?
Cockroaches, mold, and Vince McMahon, like the three things you just can't get rid of. If you go back, I'm reminded of like the show, like New Amsterdam, and they did this like opening bit when a certain Supreme Court decision was overturned earlier last year, where it's like everyone is just staring at their phones in stunned silence. And it seems very overdramatic, regardless of how you feel about the issue. And I just imagine all of Stamford, Connecticut, like looking at the work Slack channel, and they're like VKM is back. And like, it's one of those things, like, it was always, I guess, possible. And again, what do we always say in wrestling? No one's ever really gone. Like, everyone comes back. He came back. Like, there's nothing inconsistent about what happened. But early signs are I am not in favor of it.
Oh, yeah. It's a perfect shoot storyline. And it's not over-dramatizing, because when I was looking at my phone, and I originally got a text from somebody on this panel, Mr. Matt Cosgrove, and I was looking, I was like stunned. Like, it really ruined my mood for the entire day. And Matt, you were the one who broke the news to me, and I originally thought it was a joke that Vince McMahon was back, and not only, but Stephanie resigning, and then maybe this potential Saudi Arabia sale. Like, there's a lot to unpack here, Matt.
Yeah, and you know, kind of like what Jason said, it's, you know, like in business, no one's really ever gone in pro wrestling. But this is one of those cases where I was like, given, you know, how things had played out and how it was just so swift and the takeover, it's like, you know, you didn't think he'd come back so quickly like that and in a unanimous vote. like that as well, too, was what kind of shocked me also, you know, just to kind of bring him back in. It's like, and then with Stephanie leaving, going out the door, it's like, okay, well, something's up. And I thought, you know, Vince leaving was best for the business. You could tell the product is doing a lot better, but the way it kind of dominoed, it was too much of a, you know, boom, boom, boom thing to happen, where part of me thinks too that Vince has also came back and was like, if I can't have it, no one can, kind of deal. So that's the sense I'm getting from it. I don't think it's good at all for the WWE, especially if he, if it goes private and he's back in charge. I think it's going to kind of deteriorate some of the good, like the bloodline stuff. I get worried about seeing that, but more importantly, there's going to be an exodus of wrestlers if that deal goes through. And really, I think he'd help the competition more than hurt it by doing this kind of sale. So I got a lot of mixed emotions, but I'm with Jason where I think, you know, it's not good for the WWE at all for him being back.
And that's the thing, is like the product has been so good. Like it, in the last 6 months, it's almost felt too good to be true. And it's like Vince isn't really coming back. Like, but he forced his way back onto the board. And Ryan, if you remember, Stephanie actually took a break from WWE, and then all the allegations came out with Vince. Vince stepped down. Stephanie came back to WWE to assume the role. And then all of a sudden Vince comes back, and Stephanie not only like takes a break, but permanently like resigns from WWE. Like, how correlated are these two?
Listen, you know, Vince McMahon is the ultimate narcissist, right? He has created WWE in his image. He put storylines together. He put wrestlers on TV that he personally would enjoy. And, you know, it all this reminds me of, and it was actually an episode of SmackDown that I was at live in Charleston, South Carolina, when Vince McMahon said, I'm going to kill what I created. And he turns the chair around and says, me and the NWO. Like, to me, this is what that feels like. Like, I think Matt said it, like, if he can't have it, nobody can. And so the ultimate narcissist that is Vince McMahon decided, you know what? Y'all forced me out, but guess what? I've still got controlling shares of this company. I'm going to come back. I'm going to get rid of it. I'm going to do what I want to with it. And when you've got someone like Shane, who hasn't been with the company for some time, had a leave of absence for a while to go do his own stuff, now you've got Stephanie leaving the company. It's one of those things that, like, Vince took over WWF from Vince Sr. and did what his dad didn't want him to do. And we all just sort of assumed that Vince would do the right thing and eventually pass it on to his kids and pass ownership to his children and let his children take over the reins. And when the rest of the world was ready to move on from Vince McMahon, Vince McMahon wasn't. And so Stephanie went from taking her original leave of absence to, all right, I'm going back on leave. And by leave, I mean permanent resignation. You know, there's a reason why she left in the first place. Like, maybe she wants to be home with her kids more. Maybe there's a tumultuous relationship with her dad that she's tired of dealing with. Her husband has now major health problems, even though he's running the creative side of things. So I think it absolutely has to correlate with between Stephanie leaving and Vince being not necessarily in charge of creative, but coming back for the sole purpose of selling the company and not keeping it in the family that has been for 60, 70 years. And I'm sure she takes it personally, and she can go and be a fan or not watch. A lot of the wrestlers that leave don't watch WWE anymore. So maybe that's what she does. And she focuses on her family and rides off into the sunset. But I'm with the other guys on this panel. This is not a good move for WWE, and ultimately could do better for the competition than WWE themselves. And I'm curious to see what direction it goes to, because it could be really brutal.
And with this could be a bad move, like for wrestling, for everything, for Vince to come back, but mainly this sale. Like, the rumors spread that WWE sold to Saudi Arabia, and now those have been retracted like a day later. So it like makes me curious. I know I've talked to a couple of you about, like, is this really sold? What's this going on? Jason, I'm going to start with you. Do you think Saudi Arabia owns WWE right now and they're just waiting to release it, or is the company still up for sale?
So I have 2 points, and I'll lead with the first before circling back. One, Saudi Arabia's owned WWE for some time now. I think that's been very, very clear with the like off-the-shelf propaganda shows, and the fact that they keep doing them at the expense of doing them anywhere else in the world internationally. Two, 11, well, it'll be almost 12 years ago in July, and I hate always having to go back to this, but how funny is it that when CM Punk was making fun of Stephanie and Triple H in the pipe bomb, where he's like, and I'd like to think that the company will be better off when he's dead, but then he's got his son-in-law and daughter, and like the complete irony was there was probably a much better than like I think there's a chance you could have seen CM Punk at WrestleMania this year if things had shaken out differently at AEW, where I'm not convinced that he's gone forever from the longer time gets on. So it's like, yeah, Vince is gone, and then like Steph and Paul just do a great job. But coming back to like the Saudi sale, like I said, like they've sort of owned WWE for a long time, and you know they have, because they literally kept half the company on a plane on the tarmac before they could leave just a couple years ago. So this is, you know, in the same way that like small businesses who pay extortion to the mafia technically own their business, they're not the ones who are like keeping it open, and the revenue stream has been coming in for a long time, and you know, it's no one should be surprised if you kind of like follow the economics of wrestling that they would even be in the conversation, because it's quite obvious they have a very large interest in continuing to have, you know, shows and like, you know, what could be a better, dare I say, crown jewel for all of them, you know, to actually have the company itself. So they would see it as the greatest Royal Rumble ever, you know?
Oh, okay. Jason, you're done. That was out of pocket. Twice over.
Get him out of here.
But I did joke, because like I didn't even think, like when Michael texted me about it, I was like, well, that's hysterical, because only like there's no professional wrestling storyline that could be that ridiculous. And like, but then immediately I got thinking about it. I was like, you know, like the odds on like Greg Norman or Phil Mickelson winning the Royal Rumble just shot way up. Like,
oh, yeah,
just, well, there is, just have the
there is one person guys. There is one person that can make a storyline that ridiculous, and that's Vince McMahon.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. This is the weirdest storyline ever. And it's just, it screams WWE. It screams Vince. Matt, I was talking to you. You think this company sold like already, and they have the most money.
Well, I mean, I think two things on it. Even if it's not Saudi Arabia, it could be two things. Either Saudi Arabia, they leaked this information out to say this is the price we want. Someone's going to come in and buy this to kind of force Comcast or Disney or someone to come in and up the ante a little bit. I think 100% this company's getting sold. And like, it's not like we're selling sneakers or someone where it's a boom boom transaction. JP Morgan's in on this, so it's going to take a couple weeks. You got to work out a lot of finances to do it. On the other side of it, I think that the Saudi Arabia deal, like Jason was saying, they own the WWE. Like, they do the crown jewel. They held the tarmac. Vince McMahon left his own talent on the tarmac and left before the show was even over. This is a guy that ran a pay-per-view after talent has died, you know. So, like, I don't put it past him to sell this for the highest amount he can, regardless of who it's to. With that said, I think where the stop may come with the sale to Saudi Arabia is a company like Fox or Peacock or, you know, whoever owns NBC stepping in and saying, you know, hey, we own, you know, we have a little piece of this pie too. We have a TV deal, so we're not sure we want this sale to go that way, whether it's up to them to say that or not. But I think there's some hoops that they have to jump through, but I think this company is for sure sold, whether maybe it's Saudi Arabia, and it, you know, it sounded like it was, but again, it's not an overnight thing with something that big. But I also, again, too, I could think that it's the WWE bluffing and saying, leaking that out, saying it's sold, so that someone comes in and the 12th hour says, hey, here's 12 billion instead of 11. He's just trying to get some money as much as he can.
I think so. I think the greatest heist in media history was Disney buying Star Wars, in the sense that Disney paid $12 billion for Star Wars. And at first you're like, well, George Lucas made out like a bandit. And like, no, Disney got that on a coupon day. Like you think about what that property should be worth, you know, if everything that came out was at least as good as The Mandalorian. Like, you're looking at, you know, they're going to make that money back. They knew they were going to make that money back. It was like, yeah, $12 billion is a no-brainer. I think WWE is kind of the opposite with the sale, is they wanted to, like, sort of goose everybody with a high number. It's like, okay, we'll say that they wanted to pay 8, and if we can get 6, we're killing it. Like, we're doing awesome. And right. And so Vince is just trying to sort of like, how high can I get, you know, NBC Universal? How high can we get Comcast? Like, you know, is there a number that like Disney would entertain? But, you know, again, I'm not saying anything that any other like more reputable, smarter outlet hasn't already said, but like, I don't think Disney's in if they're, you know, rumored to try to offload ESPN already. Like, they,
right.
You know, it, all their commercials say they're going, you know, Hulu and Disney Plus. ESPN Plus is an afterthought.
Yeah, I can see Disney. And Ryan, with this being WrestleMania season, does this affect at all the creative direction? Because I thought we were going to have the best WrestleMania season perhaps in the last 10, 20 years, maybe all time.
So, I mean, listen, I think everything is stay the course. Everything is just eyes on the prize. We're almost 3 months away now. Let's get to WrestleMania, right? So, you know, regardless of who comes and buys the company right now, this is where they are, and they can't look past it. So I think once WrestleMania comes and goes, that might be where WWE stays in the news when the sale is actually announced. But I don't think anything changes. I think the problem that you run into is if Vince decides to try to sell it to a Saudi Arabian government or whatever the case is, if enough shareholders decide to try to file a lawsuit to stop the sale, then something may change of that. And not to mention, Matt already mentioned it earlier in the show, that there's going to be a lot of people that want out of their contracts. Now, regardless of who takes over the company, if you've got a bunch of people that want that don't mind taking the pay hit, breaking their contract and just not showing up, the more people, if just hypothetically, if Saudi Arabia were to buy WWE, you've got guys like Sami Zayn, MVP, that are not welcome in that country. You're going to have a bunch of their friends are like, if he's not welcome here, then I don't want to be a part of it. So the more you have people leave, and the more you have like the actual shareholders like outright protesting the sale of the company to one entity or another, it's kind of like the reason why Eric Bischoff didn't buy WCW. They were going to buy WCW for like $3 million, but they didn't have a TV contract. Without a TV contract, WCW is worth $20. So yeah. If you buy WWE, but you don't have any talent coming with WWE, then what's the company really worth?
Can I offer a counterpoint to that?
Sure.
I don't think people will leave. And I think you can look at the Saudi shows as proof of the small number of talent who didn't go. Now, maybe they felt like strong-armed into it, but I think it's – and they probably almost certainly were in some senses, but like, you know, Cena at a certain level, like everyone else, if you're not above a certain tier, like you're probably going to go, you know, no, like no one's like no one looks down on Brock for going, because everyone's like, well, Brock's a mercenary, like that's his character, so it like kind of works. But
he wants money.
Yeah, I think that'll be the thing, is it's like there, you'll get a lot of people like, I don't have anywhere else to go until this contract is done. And you know, do they want to sit
half the rosters making money off of playing video games online, in the case of Mandy Rose making OnlyFans, whatever the case is. I think that the big stars won't leave because they're gonna be making enough money that they won't have to worry about it. But I think when I I'm not saying everybody leaves, but I think probably a good half of the roster would probably walk out, if not for themselves, for solidarity of their coworkers, because, you know, right now, or at least before he was forced to be removed, everybody was just sort of like fed up with Vince. Like nobody was ready to quit because of Vince, but except for maybe Sasha Banks and Naomi, but nobody's ready to quit because of Vince. If they sell the company to a country that has overt beliefs that are definitively contradictory to beliefs of people on the WWE roster, they will walk away.
And one name that Matt Cosgrove brought up was Sami Zayn. Mm-hmm. That could affect the Bloodline. That could affect Roman Reigns, the Usos.
Kevin
Owens. There's a big domino effect that I think that happens. Like, you know, Jason said, yeah, the main guys come, but I mean, there's only so many times you can fly in Goldberg or Brock Lesnar or Undertaker to do these things, you know, and you can have these top tier guys, but you need to have these mid card and the other matches to build up to that. And I think if you start taking that away, you got a hole and a void that you need to fill. And again, like to Ryan's point, if you're going to do what's best for business, you don't go the Saudi route, because I think that there will be people that leave. You got people, Shayna Baszler or, you know, Bayley, and, you know, they just started letting women wrestle over in Saudi Arabia a year ago. So, I mean, if they own it, they're going to change what they want to do anyway. So there's a lot of moving parts if they do that.
Yeah, and it's going to be very interesting to see what comes down the pipe. We'll probably talk a lot about this more Wednesday, Drop the Mic Wrestling Podcast, Tuesday nights on YouTube, Wednesday on Tobacco Road Sports Radio. Catch Out of Pocket on Michael with Michael Davis Fridays at 4 on Tobacco Road Sports Radio, tobaccoroadsportsradio.com, WWBG 1470 AM. Guys, we are against the hour. We got to get franchise players right on after this. Jason, Ryan, Matt, Jackson, thank y'all so much for tuning in. And it's going to be a two-sweet weekend. Go Cowboys.